Radha follows the sound of her voice, crisp envelope in her extended hand. She holds it out to the air.
Thank you,
the woman says, taking the envelope from her and studying it. Though it's a sophisticated shade of dusty pink, it reminds her of a child's birthday party invitation, and she feels the same lift of excitement. Radha is eager, which makes the woman curious. Receiving mail is not unusual. She receives dozens of letters every week from all around the world. Experts selling themselves, sycophants wanting to befriend her, religious fundamentalists wishing to banish her, sleazy men pleading to indulge in every kind of corrupt desire on a woman they can feel but can't see. Though she'll admit, this envelope does feel different to the rest, with her name written grandly in calligraphy.
I recognize the envelope,
Radha replies, excited, sitting beside her. She is careful in opening the expensive envelope. It has a luxurious feel, and there's something deeply promising and comforting about it. She slides a handwritten note card from the envelope. Professor Elizabeth Montgomery, they read in unison.
I knew it. This is it,
Radha says, reaching for the woman's hand that holds the note and squeezing. 2.
I'm here,
the woman repeats, as the medical team assist her with a move to the new facility that will be her home for who knows how long. Radha and the few nurses she has grown close to accompany her, from her bedroom to the awaiting limousine that Professor Elizabeth Montgomery has sent for her. Not all the consultants have gathered to say goodbye. The absences are a protest against her leaving after all their work and dedication to her cause.
I'm in,
she says quietly, and the door closes. 3. There is no physical pain in disappearing. Emotionally, it's another matter. The emotional feeling of vanishing began in her early 50s, but she only became aware of the physical dissipation 3 years ago. The process was slow but steady. She would hear, I didn't see you there, or I didn't hear you sneak in. Or a colleague would stop a conversation to fill her in on the beginning of the story that she'd already heard because she'd been there the entire time. She became tired of reminding them she was there from the start, and the frequency of those comments worried her. She started wearing brighter clothes. She highlighted her hair. She spoke more loudly, airing her opinions. She stomped as she walked, anything to stand out from the crowd. She wanted to physically take hold of people's cheeks and turn them in her direction to force eye contact. She wanted to yell, look at me! On the worst days, she would go home feeling completely overwhelmed and desperate. She would look in the mirror just to make sure she was still there, to keep reminding herself of that fact. She even took to carrying a pocket mirror for those moments on the subway when she was sure she had vanished. She grew up in Boston, then moved to New York City. She thought that a city of 8 million people would be an ideal place to find friendship, love, relationships, start a life. And for a long time, she was right. But in recent years, she'd learned that the more people there were, the lonelier she felt, because her loneliness was amplified. She's on leave now, but before that, she worked for a global financial services company with 150,000 employees spread over 156 countries. Her office building on Park Avenue had almost 3,000 employees, and yet as the years went by, she increasingly felt overlooked and unseen. At 38, she entered premature menopause. It was intense. Sweat saturating the bed, often to the point she'd have to change the sheets twice a night. Inside, she felt an explosive anger and frustration. She wanted to be alone during those years. Certain fabrics irritated her skin and flared her hot flushes, which in turn flared her temper. In 2 years, she gained